And welcome back to Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm Daniel McFadden, general assignment reporter for the Democrat Gazette, but also the host of this podcast. And we are back to talk once again for week two about NASCAR, the NASCAR Cup Series specifically, after the NASCAR Cup Series went and raced at Phoenix Raceway to complete its West Coast swing. And before we get to all that, and we do have a lot to get to, with me, again, is my co-host, Jared Haas. Jared, say hi.
Well, howdy there. I'm glad to be back on this podcast, co-hosting this podcast again. A lot has went down since we left the desert, especially with the news that's happened breaking in the basically for today, too. So we got a lot to get into. Short time to do it.
Yeah, we do. We have a lot to talk about that we could... It could take us a while just to get to who won in Phoenix, but we'll start there. William Byron won at Phoenix Raceway for his second race in a row.
How high will he go?
Blaney to the bottom. William Byron. Can he get there? Byron will take the white flag. The next flag ends the race. William Byron comes off turn four. Checkered flag, Byron. I cannot believe he came back and won that race. Led early.
He won the United Rentals Work United 500. I believe it's his fifth series win, fifth or sixth?
Yeah, he's had a couple wins, and most of them have been when he's led a lot of laps. And he didn't lead over 100 laps, but, I mean, he was there right time at the right place with the pitch strategy with using two tires. And he used a late race restart with a push by Tyler Reddick to get the win going back-to-back. And I think I saw a statistic where this is the last time the 24 has won back-to-back races since 2007.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's been a while since the 24 has gone back-to-back in victory lane, but it's been, you know, the 24 has been synonymous in there, and William Byron's slowly and surely trying to build that resume.
Oh, 07. No, that would have been Gordon tying Earnhardt at Phoenix, Dale Earnhardt Sr. at Phoenix and wins.
It was the fall that season. Yeah, it was in that fall, I believe.
In the next race, he passed Earnhardt at Talladega.
Yeah,
So, wow.
Like I said, that's how long it's been since back-to-back wins for the number 24 car.
That's incredible. But, you know, yeah, William Byron, he's now won back-to-back races. He's only the second driver since Kyle Larson at the end of 2021 to win back-to-back races. Kevin Harvick got two in a row last year at Michigan and Richmond. And he was almost going to victory lane Sunday at Phoenix, but then he unfortunately had a caution with Harrison Burton having some problems there, and that racked him back up.
I was kind of surprised. During the later stage of the race, it seemed like a green flag run. Kyle Larson was there. Harvick was just slowly chipping away, and Harvick was right there, right behind him. And he must have done something. Some people may have been a switch against Kyle Larson, but Harvick just drove past him, drove to lead, and looked like this is going to be the Phoenix sunset, as Harvick's been so consistent and dominant here. And then Harrison Burton blew a tire and pitch strategy differed, and we have
Harvick took four tires, everyone else took two, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, it's again, what was it last week at Las Vegas? What won the race? Two tires.
Yeah,
I mean, you need the grip, but you also need the track position, and Phoenix is not as old of a track as Las Vegas, but I mean, track position is going to be king in those type of situations when you have six cars taking two tires.
Yeah, but I think when it comes to Harvick and him being able to track down Larson, I think it was a long run.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when it comes to guys who have been around a while, I think long runs play into someone like Harvick's favor, especially at a track like Phoenix, though, where he has nine wins, which is the all-time high.
Yeah. I mean, Larson had good short-term speed with his car. And it kind of seemed to fade longer over these runs. But Harvick, what do we call him in the past few years? We've called him the closer. There's a reason why he's put all these races together, and one of them just seemed like out of nowhere. He's like the anti-William Byron in this situation. William Byron gets all his wins. He leads a bunch of laps. He seems like he's the talker. Harvick, though, he's just kind of someone that just puts the race together, and all of a sudden you just find him in the lead in victory lane. But that was not the case with Harrison Burton losing a tire, causing that caution. Four tires, not enough track position and time to get to the front.
But William Byron, for the second year in a row, the number 24 team is the first team to win two races. It happens a lot earlier this season, going back-to-back at Vegas and Phoenix. Last year it was – Atlanta and Martinsville.
Yep.
So we're not even to Atlanta yet. We're about to get to Atlanta. But no, Chevrolet has now won the first four Cup races of the season. They have not done that since 2001. And before that, the last time they won five in a row, which they're going to try to do this weekend, the last time they did that was 1995, when Chevrolet won the first seven races of the year. And what happened in both 1995 and 2001, Jared?
I believe, wasn't that when a good old Chevrolet bow tie won the championship?
But which bow tie?
Oh, it was a Hendrick bow tie.
Yes, the bow tie. Jeff Gordon.
Yes.
Won his first and last championships.
Yes.
In those respective years. So, if time is anything, hey, you might want to might be looking at the 24 car.
I do have a note, too. It seemed like Chevrolet's I saw a statistic, too, where Chevrolet won 13 of the first 14 races of the 2007 season. So if we get something like that, and that was basically a Chevy battle between Jeff Gordon and Jimmy Johnson, mm-hmm. I mean, this is like the opposite of what happened last season with getting 19 different winners. Seems like this season's going to be a lot less parity compared to last.
Yeah. So anyway, William Byron, win number two in a row. Here's what he had to say about winning his second race of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think last year, even though we won early, we didn't really know the car or understand the car. So we were kind of just adapting to what we had, and we were just making the most of, you know, an unpredictable situation with the entire field. Like, everyone was, you know, there was a lot of attrition in the races and a lot of just weird things that were happening. And I feel like now it's strength on strength, and it feels different. It feels like we're more consistently towards the front, and we're leading laps, and we just want to focus on our processes during the week. I think our processes this week were kind of frustrating because we didn't really get to do the things we wanted to do, and everyone was a little tired, and we did that Charlotte test, and there was just a lot going on the outside. So it was a little frustrating going into today, but it's cool to see that we can, you know, overcome those things and still get a win.
Exiting Phoenix, when you look at the point standings, Mr. Haas, guide us through the point standings. Who is leading the points, and someone who hasn't even won a race this year?
Yeah, it is Alex Bowman, and you know, its consistency is key. I believe Bowman has been top 10 in all four of those
yep.
races this season.
Yep.
So with the point system so far, its consistency is key. And you're like, where's William Byron? Well, remember, too, he got wrecked out at Daytona.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really have a good run at Auto Club, not really a winning Auto Club car, but that makes the difference when you only have four races in this season. So,
and three of the four races have ended on a green-white checkered
yeah.
finish.
So it's still early to look at the point standings, but so far Alex Bowman has been the most consistent factor, scoring four top tens for Hendrick Motorsports. It's weird. We've been talking different aspects. You got William Byron's winning all the races, Kyle Larson almost there, Alex Bowman quietly talking, he's points leader, and then obviously what happened with the Chase Elliott, Josh Berry incident. So seemed like Hendrick, even though there's some things that didn't go well for him, I mean, with that, but there's a lot of things going right with the team itself and the race weekends that it's going to be interesting and fun to watch out and see how many wins can they rack up this season.
Well, everything was going right for Hendrick until Friday.
Yes.
When NASCAR confiscated parts off of all four Hendrick Motorsports cars called the Lavour. It sounds French. I don't know how to properly pronounce it, but basically
it's louvers.
Okay, let's go with that. Basically, these vents that are on the hoods of all the cars, of these next-gen cars, vents down into the engine. NASCAR saw something they didn't like on all four Hendrick cars, plus the number 31 of Justin Haley at Colleague Racing. So they confiscated those. Teams had to put on new ones for the race. No penalties were given out over the course of the weekend. But, and we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon, there hasn't been a penalty report yet. If history is any indication, and there was a lot of this last year, there was three major penalties from NASCAR against teams for modifying parts that they receive from NASCAR, from a single distributor or whatever, and they got huge penalties. RFK Racing got penalized for altering a bumper at Atlanta Motor Speedway in the spring on the number six car of Brad Keselowski. That resulted in a 100-point penalty for the driver, 100-point penalty for the owner, and the crew chief got suspended for four races. And that happened two more times throughout the year, with Front Row Motorsports at Pocono Raceway, and then Kevin Harvick had it done to him after Talladega, though I don't remember the specifics on what the parts were. So everything's going great for Hendrick Motorsports right now, but this time tomorrow, when you're listening to this, we could be getting breaking news, 100-point penalties for all four Hendrick teams at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be interesting. That's going to drop Bowman, and if it's all four affected, that's going to be – Kevin Harvick's going to be the points leader leaving Phoenix then too. But, I mean, apparently with those parts, they, you know, if they're modified, they could affect the downforce, and what's been a big factor is the downforce. Mm-hmm. Phoenix has been really hard to pass, and even with the changes that they did over the weekend, they weren't like a night and day difference. It was a slow change, but still, was, like I said, passing's rough, and teams are going to try to push the bounds as much as they can.
Also, on the Brad Keselowski penalty from last year, they did lose 10 playoff points.
Yeah.
And how many playoff points does William Byron have right now? 13.
Yeah.
So this, if that penalty does happen, it's almost like you didn't win these two races,
yeah,
for the most part.
Yeah.
Almost. I mean, I believe he'll still have his playoff eligibility because it wasn't a post-race infraction.
Yeah.
So, but still, that's – wow. That'd be just incredible. Like, Bowman's first in points, Byron's fourth. Where's Larson?
Larson's fifth.
Oh, wow.
They're all – like I said, they're pretty much in the top five in points.
But also, like I mentioned, Justin Haley's team also had the same thing taken away on theirs. So I don't know where they are in points, but it wouldn't have the same effect at the top of the board.
Yeah, no, I mean, Justin Haley down here, just looking, scanning through the points right now, is 24th in points, and he has 60 points right now.
And here is what Hendrick Motorsports vice chairman Jeff Gordon had to say about the parts that were confiscated on Friday.
Jeff, just how much of a concern is having parts taken, just even if it's for further evaluation, especially in this era, where because of the single supplier issue that the penalties can be significantly more severe than maybe years past?
I can tell you it was weighing on all of our minds, you know, coming into today, and certainly will continue. I mean, we had some conversations, we continue to have conversations with NASCAR. You know, this is, every situation sort of unique, but this one is a more unique one than I've seen in a while, where there's been a lot of communication back and forth on this particular part, especially for this racetrack, you know, because they did a parity test in the wind tunnel. And so I think it really opened up the door for some miscommunication. And, you know, I don't want to go into any further than that, but, you know, we'll continue to just share all the facts and be transparent with NASCAR as we have so far.
Okay. All right. Moving on to more news from this week. So it wasn't the most exciting race. It wasn't. Let's be honest. But the end was, and the resulting aftermath in podcast form could be interesting, because if you're watching, or if you weren't watching, on the last restart of the race in Phoenix, there was an entanglement between Denny Hamlin, driver of the number 11 Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota, and Ross Chastain, the number 1 Chevrolet for Trackhouse Racing. Hamlin got into turn one bad. He said on his podcast yesterday that the car started plowing, sending the car off the track. He was aware that Ross Chastain was there, and in a blink of an eye, the history between those two drivers flashed before Hamlin's eyes, and he decided to take his hands off the wheel and bring Ross Chastain with him back to wherever they would finish, which would be like 23rd and 24th.
Yeah.
So we didn't get into this into the pilot episode last week when we talked about Ross Chastain, but they have a history, which I was reminded it went farther back than I thought, because I thought it started back in June at Gateway Motor Speedway when, yeah, Ross Chastain in turns 1 and 2 got into the bumper of Hamlin and sent up Hamlin sliding up into the wall, and Hamlin proceeded to harass him for the rest of the race.
Yeah.
And then they had run-ins at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Not Charlotte Motor Speedway. Atlanta Motor Speedway.
Pocono.
Shoot.
They raced hard at Homestead, but they didn't like I said, battle either. But they seem to be like glue racing against each other with Hamlin and Chastain.
Oh, in the clash.
In the clash, yeah.
This preseason.
But yeah, I mean, you talked about that. It seemed like that was a 2022 issue. Obviously, Ross Chastain's raced people hard. Mm-hmm. He's rubbed quite a few people the wrong way when he's trying to be. He was trying to prove himself in the first formative years, and now Trackhouse he's established, but still trying to prove himself as a superstar in NASCAR. Find it interesting that Denny Hamlin before in last season, he's like, I'm going to get Ross Chastain when it matters the most.
Mm-hmm.
This race, we're going to be looking back to it, you know, a couple months down the road. It was more of a blip in the storyline than that, but it didn't really make an impact on Ross Chastain's move. We were kind of more expecting it, oh, it's going to happen at Homestead. You know, they're battling for the championship. Is this going to happen at Phoenix? And Hamlin's like, no, not really. And all of a sudden, it just clicked when he was behind the driver's seat that I'm going to take out Ross Chastain. But, I mean, I always appreciate blunt honesty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have to conspiracize. Oh, did Denny Hamlin have, you know, got too tight or did he intentionally wreck him? He said he intentionally wrecked him.
Oh, well, he's saying, at least on Twitter, he said, I didn't wreck him.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying on Twitter. But anyway, like on Hamlin's own podcast, Actions Detrimental, he explained the whole scenario of what happened. And here's what he said. Hamlin said, they were calling number one, Chastain, to the outside. So at that point, I knew I was screwed. I was going to go backward. I had all the four car tires on my bumper, and they were going to pass me, Hamlin explained. I know I had two fresh tires underneath me anyways. I was four wide, and I'm like, I'm going straight to the back. I'm about to finish in the mid-teens. And I said, you're coming with me, buddy. It wasn't a mistake, Hamlin reiterated. I let the wheel go, and I said he's coming with me. And so, like we said, they finished 23rd and 24th. And so this morning on SiriusXM NASCAR Radio, a NASCAR official, a former NASCAR driver, Elton Sawyer, who is currently NASCAR's Senior Vice President of Competition, addressed Hamlin's comments, and he said, without a doubt, it's on our radar. Last night late, this information was provided to me, so we'll get our team together this morning. We'll go through that very similar to the other parts and pieces that we brought back from Phoenix, and we'll decide how to go forward. I'm aware of it, and we'll dissect that early this morning and see where we go. So tomorrow's pit lane report is going to be fun.
Oh, that's good. It might be thick. Yeah, we'll see. It might be a whole bunch of nothing, or it might be a whole bunch of a lot of stuff. But, I mean, Denny Hamlin more of the years has just become pretty blunt, and I think having Actions Detrimental has been pretty interesting so far. Denny Hamlin's, you know, dropping the heat with that. But, I mean, he just basically said it, and Elton Sawyer's like, okay, well, we got to investigate. Is this really detrimental or not? Ironically, I use that as a pun, as Actions Detrimental.
Well, if you take Hamlin at his word, he didn't go into the turn with the intention of doing what he did to Hamlin, but the car messed up underneath him.
Yeah.
And he's like, eh, okay, why not? So yeah. It's not like he went in there and just gave him the boot in the wall.
Yeah.
Really.
And the weird thing about the post-race, when they were talking to each other, it was very cordial.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like Chastain was mad at him or Hamlin, you know, was trying to be defensive. It was just, they were just talking to each other on pit road, which was kind of interesting on that. So we'll see if this feud is finally over, but...
Well, Hamlin said on the podcast, after that conversation, they came to a truce, which I wrote in my weekly column at frontchurch.com, which, for us, for purely selfish reasons, I don't want that feud to end.
Like I said, it seemed like it probably will be, but I wouldn't be surprised between those two, within the season, there'll be heat in the moment type of thing, where they are battling for the win, kind of like what happened at Pocono.
Mm-hmm.
And... we'll see, but I think it's, like I said, it's mostly over, that the 2022 feud is over, but they're still going to be beating hard racing each other. They're going to be, like I said, two of the more aggressive drivers in the Cup Series.
Yeah. Well, anyway, moving on, some other breaking news today. Seven-time champion Jimmy Johnson has added a couple more races to his limited schedule this year in the Cup Series. He and the Legacy Motor Club, that's the team, right? Legacy Motor Club are... The number 84 car will return for next weekend's race. Is it next week? Next weekend's race at Circuit of the Americas in Austin, Texas, and the Coke 600 on Memorial Day weekend. And Johnson and number 84 Chevrolet will be sponsored by the Wyndham Club. So after competing in the Daytona 500, That means Johnson will compete at COTA, the Coke 600, and the Chicago Speed Street Course. So
he's trying to cross off some races off his bucket list. He's not really a road course racer, so it's going to be interesting how he's going to view Circuit of the Americas after the race. I mean, you know,
well, he wasn't like a prolific road course winner. He only had one.
I think that was Sonoma, I believe, in 2011. I think he won at Sonoma, or was it? I think it was either that year or 2010 when Marcus Ambrose ran out of gas.
Yeah, he only has one. He wasn't very prolific on it, but yeah, go into the tracks he wants the race on. So yeah. I respect that.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, it's his team. It's his car. He pulls it out when he wants to. So, I mean, we'll see. I think he's just more, this is like a fun retirement tour that he didn't get in 2020.
Yeah.
This is just something for Jimmy Johnson to do and kind of just shake down the car a little bit as well, too, to be like, all right, how does this next-gen car work, and how can I improve my team? So it's fun work. It's basically the dream of having fun while you're working.
Yeah, that's about right. But speaking of COTA, last week, after we recorded our first podcast, it was announced basically within, I think, a day or so of each other that two former Formula One world champions will be competing in the Cup race at Circuit of the Americas next weekend. That is Kimi Raikkonen, the 2007 F1 champ, and Jenson Button, the 2009 F1 champ. Kimi Raikkonen, this will be his second start after he made his debut last year with Trackhouse Racing in the number 91 car, and he's back with Trackhouse again in 91. This is part of Trackhouse's Project 91, which was the brainchild of team owner Justin Marks, the point of this program is to bring like international stars. It doesn't have to just be F1 drivers, but it's to bring these people to experience NASCAR and see what they like, because quite frankly, this car means it's better adaptability wise for people who aren't accustomed to stock car racing.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that, you know, Raikkonen, he originally wanted to go back to the NASCAR series with a stock car, was more stocky. He made the Xfinity and truck debut at Charlotte back in 2011. So it's interesting to see the, I believe the Iceman, as they call him, back in the Cup Series. And I mean, and he's not the only name that's announced for the Circuit of America. So, like I said, we already got Johnson, we got Kimi Raikkonen, and we got another F1 champion as well.
Yeah, Jenson Button, he's going to be driving the number 15 for, technically it's Rick Ware Racing. But it will be a car prepared by Stuart Haas Racing. For those who aren't aware, Rick Ware Racing is what we call a backmarker team, not as well funded as the others, so they don't usually finish as well as anybody else. But no, this car will be prepared by Stuart Haas Racing, who's, you know, one of the more top teams. So that should give him a better chance. And luckily for both of these drivers, they're going to get a 50-minute practice session on Friday for the race, so they're not being completely thrown into the fire, at least for Jenson Button.
Yeah, I mean, that's at least nice. I mean, with some of these drivers trying to make their debut, it seems to be a lot of trial by fire for some of these drivers that are trying to come back or making their first start. So it's good that NASCAR is going to be giving that extra practice section for them.
Mm-hmm.
I've been advocating that for quite a while, and I will actually be down there to cover those races at Circuit of Americas Saturday and Sunday. I will be down there, like I said, talking to those drivers and getting those interviews as well. So it's going to be a pretty interesting event. A lot of key marquee drivers are coming in here. I mean, you know, we've got
Jordan Taylor
as well, going to drive for the number 9 with, like I said, Hendrick Motorsports announced that. So
yeah, with Chase Elliott being out because he fractured his left leg in a snowboarding accident. Yeah, Jordan Taylor, who's a sports car driver.
Yeah.
So
a lot of prestige that's coming into this Cup Series race at Circuit of the Americas.
So I'm stoked for it. So I'm very excited. Last bit of news items, the ratings for Sunday's race at Phoenix have come out today. For the fourth straight race of the year, unfortunately, ratings are down for the Cup Series. It received a 1.93 rating and 3.4 million viewers. That's down from a 2.33 rating last year and 3.991 million viewers, which that sucks.
That is tough. Yeah, that's 500,000 viewers. And I mean, it's unfortunate that Chase Elliott is not there. I mean,
that's the question that's raised. Is this how much of this is Chase Elliott isn't in the race?
Yeah, I mean, that it's probably a mixture of both. I've even seen some Twitter comments like, "Yeah, it's boring to watch two races in a row when Chase Elliott's not in there." And I'm like, "Well, there's part of the problem, but I mean, that's kind of shot 500,000 viewers less from last year. I mean, it's tough. It's going to say, you know, it's like the situation with the next gen car. How do we fix this problem that with like Phoenix? Well, it's been one baby steps at a time. And the unfortunate thing is it's like some of these changes need to be leaps and bounds. And it's tough to say, like I said, I know there's been some complaints with the how the broadcast has handled some of these races. I'm not going to delve into that too much, but it's just tough to just say, all right, how do we just have more people just turn it on? You know, there's a simple factors of just marketing better, you know, having more prepared broadcast of, you know, being in depth where the fans that intermediate fans can understand it and beginner fans can understand it. And we can be understanding and not feel like, you know, it's the same information over and over again. But it's going to be tough. Like I said, it's a very tough pill to swallow that ratings went quite a bit down from last year's event.
Anyway, going forward, where are we going this weekend, Jared?
I think we made mention of this Atlanta Motor Speedway. Sorry, let me make sure I rephrase it. Atlanta Motor Super Speedway.
Yes. Yes. We are going back to, well, I keep wanting to say Hotlanta, but it's not going to be hot in Hampton, Georgia this weekend. It's going to be a high of 51 degrees on Sunday for the race.
They're always, I don't know why, it's always that spring race. You'll have like quite a few years. It's always cold. Like you'll see like drivers in coats and hats. And I think that was the same situation that it was, I think, last year as well. I mean, there was weather that affected last year's weekend as well.
I don't recall. But Sunday is the Ambetter Health 400 at Atlanta Motor Speedway. This is the third race on the new configuration at Atlanta after Marcus Smith and the bright minds at Speedway Motorsports decided that we all needed a third Super Speedway track. But it's there first. In between the 01 and 02, in between the 21 and the 22 seasons, before this was a traditional 1.5 tri-oval oval track. They raised the banking in the turns from 24 to 28 degrees, and then they also widened out the back stretch, the front stretch, in order to accommodate more side-by-side racing. But now it is a super speedway track, and pretty much for all intents and purposes, which gives us six super speedway races on the year. Who won there last year, Jared?
Huh. I wonder who won the last spring Atlanta race. I think it's somebody that's already on a hot roll, and that's William Byron.
Yep, William Byron won the inaugural race on the super speedway configuration. And in the fall, it was Georgia native Chase Elliott. But Chase Elliott will not be in the race to defend his win, unfortunately. But did you like the races last year in Atlanta?
They're chaotic. It's kind of weird to have the jarring structure of Atlanta being, you know, you're on throttle, the really rough groove, the Harvicking groove that you had down there. It was definitely jarring. It's like I said, it's kind of more what we have to live with. Marcus Smith's not going to tear down this track this year and reconfigure it back to the old Atlanta Motor Speedway. But I mean, at least I'll give him props for at least trying to make Atlanta a little bit different than besides the regular old cookie cutter tracks that took over that craze in the late 90s and the early 2000s. That's where a lot of tracks were going to. So they took it over. I mean, it's tough to have six super speedway type of races, especially when you have the smaller series and the truck series going there. That's a lot of equipment that could be torn up. But it hasn't been really crazy. There's been quite a few wrecks. It's okay. It's interesting. I'll say it'll probably be more lead changes than there was at Phoenix.
No doubt. I wasn't a fan of the change in the configuration, but I couldn't look away from the screen.
if you looked away, you're going to miss something.
So, I mean, it was captivating racing. It was kind of plagued by teams having problems with tires just blowing due to the loads on the car. Or air pressures, whatever you want to blame. It was one of those two things, but no. So Hendrick has won both races so far on the new configuration. Who is your pick to win this weekend?
Well, before we get to the picks, we got to make one note that has changed from 2022 to 2023 is the pit road entry. Mm-hmm. Pit road entry with obviously the high speeds and kind of the close proximity of the pack racing and the pit entry. They have moved pit entry all the way back to the entrance of turn three.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not entering pit road coming out right off of turn four. You're doing it on the back straightaway. Have to get down there. And you have to commit all the way down there, whether it's green or caution.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be something a little bit different. It, usually, like I said, that's not something that we see in oval. Usually it's like you just come off right off turn four, turn down, and you're fine. But this, you're going to have to do it all the way back in the back straightaway. And
this was kind of a preemptive thing because we didn't have any green flag pit stops in the first few races. So this is like just in case kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which I understand.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that for the safety cause on that because it's Atlanta's a lot smaller than Daytona and Talladega, and they have a lot more runway for the cars to get on the pit road. I mean, it's basically at Atlanta, you're just coming off of turn four, there's pit road right there. But Talladega and Daytona, there's just quite a bit of straightaway and quite a bit of stopping distance that the teams have.
Like this is a 1.5-mile track. Daytona and Talladega, Daytona's 2.5 miles, and Atlanta's 2.66 miles.
Yeah.
Much more forgiving than the 1.5-mile confines that we now have at Atlanta. So, all right, who is your pick?
Well, my pick, like I said, it didn't give me time to think about, but this driver finished second at both of these races, and I feel like the style really suits him well. Kind of just more that aggressive type of racing because it's not something that you're going to get a lot of three wide, a lot of passing. It's more protection. And I'm going to go with Ross Chastain.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Trackhouse Racing getting their first win this season.
All right. I'm taking Brad Keselowski. He and RFK Racing, specifically the number six car, have been competing up towards the front, it seems like, this year. He had the lead at the Daytona 500 with, you know, what, four to go. Four to go is when Kyle Busch and Austin Dillon made their move. But he led there. He's good at super speedways. So I'm taking Brad Keselowski to get his first win as a owner / driver at RFK Racing.
Numbers are going to be a big factor with this.
Why?
Like I said, Chevy versus Ford.
Okay.
I mean, that's what we saw in Daytona, and it's probably going to be the same factor as well with the manufacturers.
All right. Well, that's all I have, Jared. I think that's going to do it for episode 2 of Dropping the Hammer. So you can reach me on Twitter, at Daniel McFadden. You can email me at dmcfadden@adgnewsroom.com. And Jared, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at RealJaredHaas.
All right. And if you have any questions about NASCAR or what's coming up on the schedule, feel free to reach out to us and ask us. We're here to answer your questions. So, all right. Thank you for joining us again for Dropping the Hammer. This has been fun. I'm looking forward to doing more. Have a great week and talk to you next week.
After Atlanta.
After Atlanta.